our deep appreciation for your support and for your fellowship in the work in Indonesia. It's always a joy to be here and to be able to participate in your services and to have a part today in sharing with you our task, our mutual task in Indonesia. Moses spoke to the people of Israel as he reiterated the giving of the law in Deuteronomy chapter 6. He said, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These words that I command you this day shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." The power of God's word, the power of his written word, the power of writing down the message that men need for salvation. We ring out that message by personal proclamation. We ring out that message by writing things down as the prophets of old, as the apostles did, that it may be shared for generations to come. Our task in Indonesia is to provide literature for the millions of people in that nation as well as for our brethren. Look at the map. Indonesia is a big place. You may not know it is the fourth largest nation in the world. The challenge of the country, with a population in excess of 220 million people, ranking right next to the USA in world population. It is vast. It is modern in many respects. In the humongous cities like Jakarta, which now is a five-city area, there are more than 20 million people in that one metroplex. That's more than Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia all put together. In one city, it's wall-to-wall people. You can't get away from them. If you don't like to be with people, you better not go. It's also a place of great contrast. We have modern shopping malls in Jakarta, Surabaya, Medan, and other places like that. But then you have the abject poor who live in huts scattered throughout the country. The average person lives on a meager income and cannot often afford what we deem to be the necessities of life. They certainly have a very dire shortage of medical facilities for the average person and for the treatment they often need. A nation of 17,000 islands plus, the great volcano of Krakatoa blew its top a long time ago, and we had winter in the summertime in the USA because of it. And now Anak Krakatoa, the baby or the son of Krakatoa, is growing up, and others. And so they're constantly adding to the islands, but 17,000 of them, 13,000 inhabited. And you see the great contrast. There's beauty all around you, the beauty of nature, but yet there's poverty, there's filth, real pollution and filth everywhere. Every water stream in Indonesia is polluted with human feces. And so there are many problems they have to deal with throughout the country. It is the ring of fire. It sits almost atop one of the greatest faults. And when these plates move, things happen in Indonesia. There's the constant threat of earthquakes. There have been several this past year. You see the picture there where the earth just opened up and swallowed a lot of people and their houses down. Volcanoes are always spitting out smoke and ash and threatening the people who live near and actually anywhere around. It is the Muslim stronghold of the world, the largest Muslim nation in the world. 85% Islam controls that nation. But yet the Constitution provides for freedom of religion. Therefore, we can go and preach the gospel. We would not directly approach someone who is a Muslim with the gospel, but if they come to us with questions, come through to us through correspondence courses or something like that, then we have the opportunity to teach them. But they have their feast, and they have their holidays constantly. Our job then is to provide the Word of God in written form. We provide Bibles. We also translate materials. I have translated a number of books. I've authored a number of books. I work with this brother here, Alip Johari, in translating the material from Truth for Today out of Searcy, Arkansas. We've translated, I think, half of what they have published. We've only got one book printed in Indonesia, but we've got a lot of it ready to be done when we get their final okay on getting that published. And so Brother Alip translates those materials, and he sends me about 10 lessons a week. I edit or correct as necessary, send them back to him. Then he surrenders that to the brethren there, and they make the final analysis or final confirmation of when it is to be published or printed. Here's a picture of one congregation that Brother Alip leads in Jakarta, the Dharmawangsa congregation. I preached there on a Sunday morning. We had a combined worship service on our last trip on a Sunday morning. We had a fellowship meal afterwards. The lady there that you see standing up is the one who did most of the providing of the meal. Others helped her with funds to buy the materials. It was a delicious Indonesian meal. Of course, usually all Indonesian food is highly spicy. If you like chili peppers, you would like Indonesian food. Some of it will peel your tongue off. But if it doesn't have it, they'll say it doesn't have any flavor. These brethren meet in a rented facility. It costs them about $20 per week, a very small room, and they have to bring all of their things in to have the services. They have to take it out when that's over until the next week. And so at some time in the near future, Brother Alip talked to me when I was there this past year in December. They want to rent a shop house where they can have a place of worship as well as a place to meet with Bible Correspondence Course students and to have other activities there to teach the people of that nation. Brother Alip is a tremendous man. He was one of those who was in prison for 6 months when a property dispute caused him and his brother and another person to spend several months in prison. It was, of course, false accusations, but Brother Alip and his family weathered the storm. He is a great leader and a great teacher of the gospel. We provide these materials through the printed page, as I mentioned. Here we have several books that I have translated and some that I authored. I might also tell you that the one book there in purple called Gereja Alkitab, that's the Church of the Bible, we've changed it a little bit. Now it's Jemaat Kristus, the Church of Christ. But we also have not only printed this in Indonesian, we've just recently made it available to the brethren in Nias. The island of Nias is off the western coast of Sumatra. You don't have it on your map. I want to bring it down and paste it on there. But Nias, we have more congregations on the island of Nias than any other place in Indonesia. We have 80-plus congregations. So there's a great need for literature and training, and especially in their own language. They lack it in their mother tongue, if we can provide it for them. And so we are doing that. We're also getting another book translated. It's in the process now, so they can have this material on the role of women, a very vital need for them, because there's much confusion throughout Indonesia, just as in our own country, and even in the church, about the role of women. That women may be preachers, may be leaders of congregations, can lead singing or get up and address a mixed assembly. So we need to know what the Bible teaches about that, and we're also dealing with that particular need there. Here are some brethren in Medan on the left there. Brother Tuluasa Nduru is the preacher in this local congregation. And you see there in a Bible study in one of the brethren's home, we are trying to get together, we have got most of the funds together, and trying to get a piece of property for them to have a small property and a building in Medan. They've been meeting in the home of the Brother Laia, who died a few years ago. They've met there for many, many years, but that property is going to be sold since he and his wife died. And they need a place of their own. We have just found a piece of property that I think is ideal, and we're in the process of trying to buy that. We do need $2,000 more. So if you've got some extra funds, I know what you can do with it. And those brethren would greatly appreciate it. These, I'll show you some pictures in a moment. These brethren are extremely poor. Most of them drive what you might call a rickshaw or a trishaw. They call them becaks in Indonesia. But it's a bicycle cart. Some of them are motorized, most of them not. The side cart on it. And that's how they make their living. They go out and people, they rent that like a taxi or for transportation or to transport goods. These brethren in that small congregation have pledged $2,000 themselves toward the purchase price of that land. So they are committed and they are involved. We have leadership training classes each time that we go. That's a picture of the brethren in Nias in Gunung Sitoli, the capital city. This is the church building in Gunung Sitoli. Brother Dennis Cady, an elder now in the Faith Village Church in Wichita Falls, Texas, our fellow worker, he was a fellow missionary in the 70s in North Sumatra with us. He is now a businessman, quite well off. He has put a lot of money into that of his own. He got other people who could help him to buy the property and build this very nice building in Nias. We will not have anything like that in Maidan. We will get by with something much less. But at any rate, this facility is very commodious and very useful. Each time we go, we bring in brethren from the villages throughout the congregations on the island of Nias, and we train them intensively for about 10 to 12 days. And when you sit in a building that doesn't have air conditioning, and you sweat like we used to years ago before we had all these modern conveniences, and you sit on a wooden chair with a wooden table for several hours a day, it takes a lot out of you. And it takes a lot to teach in that kind of environment as well. But these brethren, they make it through, and they are anxious to continue to study. Here's a picture of the group that we had and the men who were taking those courses and finished up as well. A picture outside as we were gathering, coming in for Sunday worship there in Nias. And this is an inside picture of the congregation, at least part of it. You can't get a whole picture in a digital camera. And so that's half of it on one side. And I asked them that day after we had worship services. I had the privilege of speaking for the first service in that new building. Brother Cady had built it and got it built, and he was here in the States. And I was over there, and I preached the first sermon. And he was very jealous, of course, but nevertheless. I asked them, how many people were there? And they said 200. I said, no, that's not right. I said, you need a preacher count. There was at least 400 here. And so, but they wouldn't accept my count. They should have. Right outside the hotel where we stay in Gunung Sitoli is a beach, and it's right there on the water. This picture does not do it justice, but it's very, very filthy. And many of the homes that live right there on the beach, these people are poor fishermen. They do not have inside plumbing. So they use those facilities that you older folks remember using years ago. And in the morning, they take that out and dump it on the beach. And the tide takes it out. And you see these kids then out there playing in the same place, having their fun during the day. Soap is expensive. Washing powder is expensive for the average Indonesian. And so cleanliness is something that's very hard to come by. This man in the white shirt was crippled. He had a walking stick or a cane, and he went up and down the beach every day trying to salvage something as he scavenged through garbage that other people had thrown out. And he went up and down every day. Ellen gave him some rupiahs two or three different times to help him because he was really pitiful. He's trying to find plastic bags, tin cans, or bottles, glass bottles, to take those and resell those, recycle those to get a few dimes or a few pennies to try to eke out a living. And so there are many people like that throughout the nation. This young lady was at least enjoying her broken umbrella to keep the sun off of her head. In Bekasi, which is one of the cities in the metropolitan area of Jakarta, on the Sunday that we were there last November, I guess it was, Brother Daniel Satiabudi, the leader of that congregation, baptized a couple, and this man was baptized. Notice, I mentioned in my newsletter, it was done in a kid's swimming pool because they don't have a baptistry there. They have to fill this thing full and then baptize the people in that and then empty it out later. So they're very ingenious in what they're able to do in coming up with answers to problems they may have. Brother Satiabudi teaches classes daily. He teaches the Bible using English. It turns out mostly to be Bible, really, and not so much English. I also taught those classes while we were there. He also conducts a weekly radio program, and they offer correspondence courses over the radio. They have a lot of people taking those courses, a lot of Bible studies, personal Bible studies going on, and a lot of good results. He's also involved in helping people who are very poor in the area, and I have a picture of that in a moment. Here are a picture of some of the classes as we gathered at various times. That's Brother Martin Johnson there. He was in Jakarta, Bekasi at the time we were there last year. He has since come back to the States. He's pursuing studies at Freed Hardeman. And he hopes to finalize his education there before too long. And we hope he can go back because he's a very sound young man, has a lot of ability, has learned the language, and so he's very needed. We don't have any young missionaries going to Indonesia. We don't have any old missionaries going to Indonesia on a permanent basis. And us old folks who've been there for 40 years, we know it's not going to be too many more years. We're going to have to quit going because we're not able to make it. And so what's going to happen? We're training the brethren to do the job, but we do need outside people to come also to encourage and strengthen and fill in the gaps that sometimes are there. Here's a class I was teaching there in the same Bekasi building. They have a rented building, and that's going to be up probably sometime this year. They're looking for some other facility. Brother Steve Kate primarily supports that congregation, or Brother Satya Budi is supported by the church in Oklahoma that helps our working fund. But Brother Kate helps to provide the facilities for them for the place to meet. Upstairs in that three-story shop house is an apartment where we stay when we're there. And this is the modern kitchen that Ellen works out of while we're there. And you can see then that's we have a two-burner gas burner cooker there. And the place where you keep your dishes and that plastic tub there to put things inside of. But it does have a toilet. And it has an air conditioner when the electricity is on. So we enjoy that. And it saves quite a bit from us having to rent a hotel or pay for a hotel. But that's where we stay in Bekasi. Right outside of that, you can see the great contrast where people live in these huts. They're what we might call sharecroppers, but they work daily there in trying to make their living. In our country, in years past, we worked in the fields chopping cotton and peanuts, and hoeing peanuts and various corn and various things. We use a long-handle hoe that usually has a straight handle and maybe a little crook on the hoe itself. But over in Indonesia, the hoe handle is about this long. It's crooked. A blade's about this wide and this long. And when you put it down in that mud, it goes when you pull it out. It takes a lot of strength to work in those fields. But if you're going to grow rice in Indonesia, that's the way you do it. They don't have the equipment to put it in the ground and work with it like we do in this country. It's all by hand. The seedlings are put out by hand. It's all worked by hand. And it's dirty, hard work. But many, many people make their living that way. In Bekasi, as I mentioned, there's an effort to help garbage children. Some people are so poor that all they can do is collect garbage. And so it goes in various processes. Some have a cart with wheels on it. They gather from people's homes. Others have trucks that come to the bigger complexes. It's all taken to one place and sorted out. And the families live right next to those garbage dumps and their children. They cannot afford to send them to school. They're too poor. And so the church in Bekasi gathers water bottles and newspapers, and they give these to those people. They can recycle then and get some income to have a few meals. There is a Chinese congregation in Jakarta. They call themselves the congregation mainly Chinese. Sometimes we have a few Indonesians who come and worship there. But they're meeting in a facility that belongs to a Chinese brother. We met early that day to practice some songs. A brother in the white shirt had never led singing. He was converted in Australia. He had never led singing, but he was forced to do so when the congregation, the people who led the singing, left and went away. And so he was wanting some help to learn the tunes on some of the songs he was trying to sing, and we helped out that day. That's the garbage truck that was picking up the garbage outside of the complex where the church meets in Bekasi, and I mentioned we stayed upstairs on the third floor. So a very interesting job, but it smells just as good as garbage smells anywhere, but in the tropical climate, you get all the benefits of it. Typical street scene in the Bekasi area, as you would find in any larger city throughout the country. And many people live in mansions, of course. They have palaces in Jakarta and the big cities. People who are filthy rich. But that's not the way the average person lives. And we're dealing mainly with the average people of Indonesia. On the particular time in November, they had the annual slaughter day, or sacrifice day, a Muslim holiday, where they celebrate Abraham offering Ishmael. Ishmael, I guess I should say. They say Ishmael. They say that Abraham did not offer Isaac. He offered Ishmael. And so they celebrate it with animal sacrifices. And a cow cost about $1,000. A goat cost about $600. And so they were selling these things all along the streets, every street corner throughout the cities, big cities, up and down the streets, selling these animals because you're supposed to, if you can afford it, buy one of these animals, slaughter it, and divide it to the poor. And they had riots even at the police station when they were trying to divvy up the meat because some of it had already spoiled. And people refused to take it, of course. In Maidan, I mentioned they need a place of their own. This is inside the building of the home of Brother Laia, former home of Brother Laia. And part of the congregation, the children who were there that day, that's a Sukabaru, the New Hope Church, you might say. And we're hoping to soon have a piece of property and be able to have a place of their own. That's part of the congregation also. And the man with the mustache is Brother Tuluwasa Nduru that I mentioned. He's well-educated, well-trained, a very capable man, and very solid, and does a great job of teaching and preaching not only in Maidan, but in areas nearby where they have recently established a new congregation about 40 miles away up in the mountain. Most of the people that he works with in this congregation are native Nias people because he also is a Nias man. And so there's another two or three other congregations in Maidan, but they don't mix too well. They usually try to stay by their own group, and they work better that way. And this is mainly a Nias congregation. Here's a study group where we met for a Bible study. The last time I was there, we were supposed to have a Bible study, and I took with me a course of study to teach. But they had so many questions, we had 4 nights of nothing but questions. We spent all our time on questions, answering various questions that they had. And so you see, there's a need to have these things printed, the books printed and training materials printed and answers and tracts that they can use to deal with problems and questions that come up. And that's why we're working to provide this for them, so they can have these tools to use to further their own understanding and training, as well as sharing the gospel with those around them. Inside the home of one of the brothers there in Maidan, and you see this is how the average Indonesian lives. That's their closet there where the clothes are hanging in the corner. They do have a television such as it is, and the television programming leaves a lot to be desired, of course, and especially when you think about the filth that we export from the USA. The most horrible programs you can think of, they show them on TV in Indonesia that I am embarrassed to see and to watch and to know they come from this country. And when they see those things, they think that's the way all of us over here live. And we have to try to disabuse them of such an idea. But it's difficult when they see the stereotypes that are shown on television. But we were having Bible study there during the week. These are the Bechaks that I mentioned that so many of those brethren there drive every day to make their living. Now here's a typical scene also, an entire family on a motorcycle. And sometimes you'll see more than this on there. But notice they don't have any helmets on. They do have a helmet law, but either they didn't wear them or they hadn't put them on yet. But you'll see this all over the cities, all over the countries, everywhere. Entire families riding on a motorcycle. A lot of times the lady will be sitting side saddle on the back. And if you hit a bump or somebody hits you, you're done for because there's no way to control it and to stay on if you get hit if you're sitting that way. Back on Nias, a restaurant where we ate some meals there, the time before last when we were there, they did not have a decent restaurant in Nias. Now they've got 3 restaurants where we can get some real good food, and this was one of them. The man there in the helmet had just come in to get some carry-out orders. Probably used his hand phone to call it in and came in and picked it up. Hand phones are ubiquitous in Indonesia like they are here. I mean, anybody that has a nickel is going to have a hand phone. And, of course, the other kind are not much use anyway and not reliable. And so you can see the need for it. But it's really amazing to me to see some of these people you'd think were so poor he couldn't even afford a pair of flip-flops and he'll pull out a hand phone when it rings. And you say, where's that coming from? And so this man had come in for that. We had a baptismal service that Sunday in Nias, and they had to go out to the sea to baptize the people, of course. And here's the group that went out. And we had prayer afterwards when the baptisms were completed. The goats are the cleanup crew. Goat is a very popular meat throughout Indonesia, very good. And, of course, provides a living for the people who grow them and provides food for the people who eat them. But out on this beach, they'd come along, and what the poor people did not scavenge for themselves to try to recycle, the goats then come along and clean up most of that also. and there are a lot of other animals that come through as well. Brother Kerry, one of the preachers there in Gunung Sitoli, would come and pick me up from where we were staying, and I would ride on the back of the motorcycle most of the time to go into class. Sometimes I would take one of those Bechaks and ride in that way. A typical store in Indonesia, this one in Nias again, and you see the plastic goods. They have food items as well. They have a lot of clothing items, all sorts of things you can buy. They're available there. These are children in an orphanage, children's home in Gunung Sitoli. Brother Katie also is responsible for that work, having raised the funds and contributed a lot himself and his family to building that orphanage or getting it done. They have a number of children there. The criteria, they want children from families who are members of the church first. And that's the first ones who are chosen. And they came up with a way to choose children. They said, we want those, of course, who have either no parents or maybe one parent who cannot support them. But within 2 years, if that child might be dead, that's the children we're looking for. And that's the children they first chose. One young man, a child, he's in this picture, came in. A few months after he was there, he had an older sibling to die. He himself got very, very sick, and had he not been in this home and got the medical treatment that he needed, he also would have died. And so these are children primarily from homes who are members of the church, and there are many of them there. It's not as bad as it is in Haiti, but they do have a lot of them throughout Indonesia because of the economy, and they're dealing with that problem in Nias with these children's homes. And there is the modern way of washing clothes there also, without the conveniences that we take for granted. Do it the old-fashioned way. That's the kitchen there. You see the sacks of rice and the kerosene cookers to cook their meals and prepare the meals for the children. Also on Nias, in connection with the church, they have training classes that are what we might call vocational training. And this is a sewing class. In one of my newsletters, I reported that a young man who was forced by his parents to marry when he was 14 years old, by the time he was 20, he had 5 children, and he was destitute. He came in to take the sewing class, and they realized as he was taking the class that he seemed to be somewhat lethargic. Came to find out he was trying to exist on 1 meal a day because he had no money. And so they came together and provided some money for his food so he could have something to eat. When he finished that course, he went back to his village, and he began to sew clothes for others and make a living. And he's done so well that when we were there last time, he went and bought a second sewing machine to hire someone to help him with the work. So a great success story. Vocational training. They also have computer training as well. And so these are doing great. Typical market scene as you go through Indonesia. Get your fish early in the morning. You wouldn't want to wait later in the afternoon. They had a problem one time. The meat markets, they were putting formaldehyde on the meat and fish. Made it look good, but a lot of people died from it, and so the government had to step in and try to solve that problem. All sorts of good veggies to eat, and this is typical throughout Indonesia. Another typical street scene, if you came to visit Indonesia, the average little town would look like this, with the banks there and the shops and the crowds going up and down various ways. Teaching one of the men's training class on Nias in Gunung Sitoli. In one of the hotels where we stayed, you may not be able to see that, but that's the door. There's newspaper inserted all up and down the door and under the bottom. And that's because mosquitoes love American blood. And we want to deny them all we can. And so every night, when we closed the door and we knew we were not likely going out again, we'd stuff newspapers all in those cracks to keep those friendly creatures outside where they should be. And we had our breakfast in our room. The hotel provided the breakfast. It's in a banana leaf, then in a piece of brown paper, butcher paper. And we get rice, maybe with a boiled egg, or rice with a piece of meat of some kind, always with that good hot chili, of course. And that was our breakfast. Sometimes we had a little pitcher that we could boil water. We'd make instant oatmeal. Then we would try to eat a meal out at a restaurant during the lunchtime. At nighttime, usually just eat fruit or crackers and peanut butter. And here's Ellen's favorite job. She loves ironing. Just ask her about it. But she does that for us all the way. She does all the washing by hand and all of our ironing. on the entire trip. So we really appreciate her great efforts and what a difference it makes, and it saves a lot of money. Because if you get that done in a hotel, it's going to cost you big bucks. Here's the modern airplane, latest, state-of-the-art. And you see also the loading of the luggage using the most modern facilities as well. That's the plane that takes us to Gunung Sitoli. I usually try to go out and see if I can find the rubber band and make sure it's in good shape before we get on. But it's not quite that bad, but you might think so. These are really old airplanes, but so far they haven't crashed with us. And we pray God that they will continue to keep us up in the air. To provide then for all of these people what they need so desperately, the gospel of Christ, to provide them printed materials, Bibles included, that they can be equipped to share the gospel with their neighbors, to train brethren in the Word of God, that they will know what to say and how to say it, and how to lead others to Jesus Christ. We solicit your continued help. We appreciate your help so very, very much. It is a great challenge to reach to this great nation of these millions of people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. The task before us is great, but God has given us that commission. When I think about the millions there who are dying without Christ, it motivates me to say, we must go. Those people, by and large, do not have the opportunity that you enjoy today to hear the gospel of Christ, to have the opportunity to obey that gospel. Millions have died and will continue to die without knowing Jesus Christ as their Savior. But you have that opportunity even this hour. If you've never obeyed the gospel, the saving gospel of Jesus Christ, He has died for you. He shed His blood that you can be saved. You have the opportunity even this hour to say, Lord, I accept your call. I accept the challenge of living for you in the midst of an ungodly world. He's calling you through His word today. If you've never